This episode is brought to you by VideoBlocks.com. Go to VideoBlocks.com/NotAlone to learn how to claim your exclusive offer for being a listener of the Not Alone podcast. We are also brought to you by the amazing support of our patrons over at Patreon.com/NotAlonePodcast. Head over there to find out how you can get access to the show a few days early. You can get access to bonus episodes, all sorts of great rewards for supporting your favorite show. Again, that's Patreon.com/NotAlonePodcast. Thank you so much to everyone who pledges to us each month and really helps us keep the lights on.
Ace Podcast.
This podcast is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Visit darkmyths.org to discover more shows like this one. The darkness awaits.
Hello and welcome to the Not Alone podcast. Today, well, I'm Sam Fredrickson.
And I'm Jason Moitoso.
And today we have the privilege, nay, the pleasure, to commune about our old-timey favorite of mythical beasts and magical creatures, the one, the illustrious only... Dragon. That's my intro for this episode.
How long did you practice that?
Not at all. I just came up with that on the fly.
On the spot.
I was in acting in high school, so I've got okay improv techniques. I'll tell you what.
That was beautiful.
Hello. Today we are having our fifth?
What are you talking about?
Jason's special. Four.
Be fourth.
Today is our fourth ever Jason special. And and as you know, well, as you may not know, let's go from that approach. As you may not know, if you're one of our relatively new listeners, every so often I just give Jason the microphones and the time and everything, and I let him do it. I let him pick what we're going to talk about. I let him do all the research. I'm the one who gets to sit here and make snarky comments. It's like a true role reversal. And today is
our... My comments are snarky.
I have a lot of listener feedback that would beg to differ.
All right, fine.
And today we are doing our fourth ever installment in the Jason Special series.
Oh, so yeah.
I am going to go ahead and I'm going to cede my time over to Jason. I'll be here. Also, it's worth noting that this is also not that we're anticipating it getting too crazy. This is also the first time we are drinking while recording because you want to tell the people what we got?
Because I thought it was important for us to involve all flavor of dragons into our conversation today. And we are drinking the Dragon Tooth Stout.
Yes, by Elysian.
Which is not bad.
No, it's really not. So, like I said, I don't think that's going to be too big of a deal. But let's...
we'll find out by the end of the show.
We'll see, one way or the other. Yeah, I, as host... Assume the role of co-host.
Are you a little nervous right now?
And I just a little bit. I always am. And I transfer my host powers over to Jason.
Whoa! Wow, that was rejuvenating. Thank you.
All right.
So I was a little on the edge about talking about dragons today, and because really they're mythological for us. They're nothing more than tales and stories of the past.
It's definitely not our usual, you know, right?
Yeah.
We try to stick by, I don't know, format, I guess.
But in light of some feedback and really some nudging, I decided that it's okay to go ahead and do it. We'll talk about dragons today, and it's going to be a great conversation. And in my mind, I'm playing it off as in, these are just the cryptids of the Middle Ages.
Yes, yes.
So, you know.
And we did have a lot of people ask us for a dragons episode, which is fine with me. That's fine. So, all right.
And I love it. And a little bit of this is also going to be kind of a critique of what fooled me as a child, and probably Sam as well, but the Last Dragon documentary, which I went ahead and rewatched And man, I thought the CG was way better when I was a child. it's a little rough now.
Let me just tell you.
Uh-huh.
My mother. I love my mother. She wanted us as children. She wanted us to dream and believe and imagine. And so we watched, I saw this like commercial back when we had those, this commercial for this Dragons Among Us or The Last Dragon. It goes by like three
or four
different.
The Last Dragon, a fantasy made real.
Yeah, that's it. Dragons, fantasy made, whatever, dude. I saw this commercial for it. And I begged and begged and begged. I think it was even probably like a little past my bedtime or something. And I begged my mom to let me stay it. And we like put it on the calendar. And we all sat together as a family and we watched it. And my mother, I was sitting there like, oh my goodness, dragons are real. Holy crap. And my mother and my father and my brothers were all watching it. And everyone kept their mouth shut, which was nice. Nobody ruined it for me. But my mother specifically, I remember we were talking about dragons some other time, and she said, but we know, this is like one of my early memories. She's like, but we know that dragons are real, don't we? Because of that documentary. And I was like, yeah, mom, yeah, we do. And so in that way, she like kept the magic alive just long enough for me to then put two and two together that dragons aren't real.
Yeah.
And then I had a crisis about that when I was like 14. But that's going to be my major contribution to this show is just... parents, if you're out there, let your kids dream. The world is going to wake them up eventually. You don't have to do it for them, okay? You just,
yeah,
just
mom,
let them dream, okay? All right, okay, go ahead.
All right, so kind of based off of that, Discovery also did like a Megalodon show as well that mm-hmm. actually convinced a lot of people that Megalodons were actually still alive mm-hmm. and well. And they're absolutely not. Discovery got a huge backlash about that. They died out 2 million years ago. But the reason why I bring it up is because for a long time, people believed that the actual teeth of megalodons were the tongues of dragons and giant serpents. Which, of course, now we know is not true. It was just a giant mega shark that ate whales because that's yummy.
I feel like the Megalodon, of course, actually existed.
Yeah.
And so it would be a lot easier to fool the general public because you see that stuff, right? You see that kind of stuff, like with the coelacanth and all of that, where it's like, we thought this thing was dead for 50 million years and then it was alive again. So I can see why, like, obviously they didn't get a big lash back on the Dragons documentary, but on the Megalodon one, that's, yeah, I feel that.
Yeah, I think it's mainly because on the Dragon one, it was literally called a fantasy made real.
Right.
Like it was not supposed to be a full fiction.
Not very
non-fictional,
subtle.
Yeah, documentary.
Okay. I didn't put it together.
Well, neither of us did.
Yes,
and most of the people our age probably did not. But the Megalodon, I know, documentary.
I'm so sad.
They actually doctored actual photos and played it off as being like legit.
Ah.
And then they did that, the Merfolks, and that was awful.
Yeah, so that's the other thing, that Merfolk one. I was like 18. They did the same thing with mer people, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I was like 18 when I saw that one, and I hate to say it, it still convinced me. I believed in mer people. It was intense. All right.
Well, with that out of the way, I did actually really enjoy the documentary. There are some plot holes, and I'm going to definitely be talking about them a little bit. But first, I want to talk about how dragons sprung up in both Western and Eastern cultures.
All right.
So one of the earliest records of a dragon is actually from Babylonian lore, where a giant female dragon of chaos essentially defeated all the champions of the Babylonian gods until one god was able to actually slay her. And from her body, he fashioned the earth and the heavens. And then from her blood, fashioned man.
Oh, man.
Which is pretty cool.
That's so hardcore.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, man.
Right? So from the beginning in the Western culture, we have this idea that dragons are chaotic.
Mm-hmm.
They're evil. They're against what we really want to do, which is essentially conquer nature in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. And with that as well, dragons also took to the sea. A lot of culture and a lot of lore have the Hebrew god essentially creating a giant serpent,
yeah, dude.
Which apparently he will be killing on the Day of Judgment.
Leviathan.
Exactly.
It's the most hardcore thing in the Bible.
It's pretty, yeah, it kind of is. So,
sorry, I got excited there.
No, you're good. So, giant reptiles are dragons, essentially, is what I'm kind of feeling. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that all these dragons are winged beasts that breathe fire. Dragons was more of used of a term as something that is chaotic and destructive against man, and great big creatures that we cannot tame, essentially.
Okay.
Sea serpents were dragons, called dragons for a long time in Western culture. And I think a little bit has to do with also the idea of Christianity coming about and also using dragons as a metaphor for pagan religion in general. Because when you do have the growth of Christianity, you have a lot of the pagan religion, and those who do still worship it got pushed out to the outskirts. It makes a lot of sense for dragons being in mountains and in them hills if it was all these crazy pagan rituals going on that looked unnatural for most other believers of Christianity or a faith similar to it.
That's true. And it factors in, right? When we look back at the Bible, Old Testament and New Testament, there's definitely reference to dragons, especially the more you look, you know, especially when you're looking in like the Book of Revelation, stuff like that. But you even look then past that into the more contemporary, not like modern day, but into the common era, and you see stories like the story of Saint George and the Dragon, right? This folk tale of a saint going forth and slaying a dragon that is for the most part, now of course these days we look at it as more of a metaphor and symbolic and this and that, but especially in the Middle Ages and even to some people these days, up through this present day, you have people looking at that as a literal, like, well, of course there were dragons once because Saint George slew one. So, and it's the same sort of thing with folklore everywhere, but yeah, Christianity definitely incorporates the dragon into its folklore, belief systems, all of that. Yeah.
Right. So breathing fire is not the only thing that a dragon can do. A lot of them also are in the seas or deal with weather and patterns, waves crashing, and floods. Now, that also is kind of noted in Eastern dragons. So before talking about Asian culture and their dragons, I'm going to come back a step, because there is one other dragon that has spawned a great number of new, I guess not new creatures, but a new subspecies of dragons, and that is the gargler.
Oh,
did you ever find out about the gargler, Sam?
No.
Anyway.
That sounds terrible. What?
The legend has it that there was a dragon that came from the sea and spouted water everywhere, flooding things.
Okay.
And a bishop in the town, wielding a cross, came out to the dragon and banished it away.
Banished. Okay.
And now, gargoyles are put on cathedrals as the water runoffs, because they spew water out of their mouths.
They're the gargoyles.
They're the gargoyles.
That's disgusting.
So, yeah, don't just think about fire and mountains and stuff when you think about dragons, because dragons was a term used far and wide to essentially, again, talk about something chaotic or massive destruction and essentially at their whim. That's not quite the case, though, when you turn your view towards the Asian cultures. China, specifically, their dragons are much more, don't get me wrong, they're still essentially almost deities of oceans and water.
Oh, they are, yeah.
They are
totally
a force
gods
of water, which throws off a little bit of my ideas, and I'll get to those later. But they're also regal. They're noble, and they are signs of good fortune, which is why they frequently were displayed on the crests of emperors of China throughout their dynasties. Same thing characterized throughout on Korean and Japanese dragons as well. Right. So you've got more serpents, though. None of them actually have wings.
They don't have wings.
They fly through the sky with essentially magic, which is one of the things that absolutely differs from the European, especially the late European models of dragons that actually were winged.
Mm-hmm.
And about those wings, I'm going to switch back gears.
Okay.
Well, the one thing that they absolutely represent is bat wings.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Now, I'm not sure if that's just to make them look menacing, but those wings are actually going to come in very, very handy.
All right.
Bat wings are actually really cool because they are just built from fingers.
Yes.
Which makes them a lot more flexible than what bird wings are.
Freaky.
They look freaky. Yeah, they look menacing.
Freaky.
But they're much more maneuverable than what a bird's wings are. Mainly because bird wings, they're more rigid. They're stiff.
Okay.
They don't have any movement between the wing itself because it's all feather. So they don't have a whole lot they can do as far as mid-air movements. While bats, because of the way that their wings are shaped from their hands themselves, they're way more maneuverable, which is why they are so fantastic at flying at night and to catch insects.
Mm.
So bat wings are really great.
Okay.
They're also really great if we put them on a dragon.
Yeah.
Because of that.
Yeah.
A more maneuverable dragon is probably a deadlier dragon.
True.
Especially if the dragon lives in caves.
True.
But, speaking of dragons, let's talk about the last dragon, shall we? A little bit?
Yeah.
You all right with that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so I actually really like a lot of the aspects that they took with that documentary. There are a few things that don't quite work very well for me, which, of course, I'll talk about.
I like how your transition into this was, but talking about dragons, as if that's not what we've been doing for 30 minutes.
Dragons are so great, dude.
Go ahead. Keep going.
Anyway, so how they essentially have it starting is that we get first introduced to the dragons as a wyvern, which wyverns are absolutely the most feasible version of a dragon that we currently could have on Earth, sort of.
Okay.
Okay? Now, what I love about it is that they essentially state that a dragon is able to overcome its mass for flight and be able to breathe fire with a nifty little sack that essentially inflates with methane.
Mm-hmm.
Which is understandable. Methane gas happens just from digestion of stuff, of food. So we make methane. We just don't store it in a bladder of sorts.
Right.
And also hydrogen.
Really quick.
Yeah.
What's a wyvern? Let's take that. Let's go there.
It's a great idea.
Let's set that scene.
Yeah. So a wyvern, it's a two-legged dragon with wings.
Okay, so it doesn't have hands and arms and
four
stuff.
Limbs.
Okay, four limbs.
Four
okay,
limbs.
Yep, not six.
Not six.
All right, okay.
It's not a hexapod.
As opposed to a fire drake, which is, or a drake in general, but typically a fire drake, which is a six-limbed creature.
Hexapod.
Two arms, two legs, yes, hexapod. Is it hex?
It is hex. Hex is six.
Really? What a time to be alive. two arms, two legs, and two wings. So that's what the wyvern is. All right, go ahead.
Anyway, the wyvern is probably going to be the one dragon that would actually exist sort of in our timeline. And there has been one that kind of fits the lines of being a dragon. I'm going to get into that dinosaur in just a moment. But anyway, through the last dragon, apparently it has a bladder that would store methane gas and hydrogen, which is interesting.
Mm.
Now, hydrogen being lighter than air, essentially counteracts a lot of the weight that would be pulling down on the dragon for flight.
Mm.
So I'm not exactly sure. I'm not a science major of any means, but I'm not exactly sure how the body would naturally create hydrogen, especially if we're talking about like a dietary tract like methane is. You're good?
I read once, and it may have been in my dragonology book.
Yes.
Which I still have to this day.
Oh, so do I. It's in my closet. Why did I bring it?
Yeah. I could go grab mine. I read that, like, what if... Okay, so it wasn't a scientific statement. It was more of like a question of, what if the bones are hollow? Does that help at all?
They would have to be.
Okay, they would have to be.
They would have to be.
And then you fill those bones up with hydrogen.
Then it would just blow up.
Okay, all right. Let's take it back a step and say they have to be hollow. Okay.
Okay.
All right, go ahead.
So, like, the bones full of hydrogen idea, that's actually pretty nifty. But if they sustained any kind of limb damage whatsoever, then...
Is hydrogen a particularly combustible substance?
I mean, it's combustible.
Isn't that what the Hindenburg was
yes,
for?
Yes, it was. Yeah, it's combustible.
And we all remember what happened there.
But I think it's a little far-fetched to think that just bones would generate helium or hydrogen as well.
I agree.
So it's I like it. And hollow bones is one reason why that birds can fly, and also why pterodons were able to fly.
Ooh.
Right? So anyway, back to our prehistoric wyvern that fought with T-Rexes. Because that's a thing too.
Nice. That's hardcore.
The major thing that I'm pulling from that is that they overcame the issue with flight.
Mm-hmm.
Because of their mass from helium and hydrogen that they built up in their systems.
Okay.
Because flight is a tricky thing to deal with. Now, as you get more massive, you have to overcome a whole lot more drag and a lot more weight from gravity.
Right.
Now, the drag, of course, is its own problem. Weight's a big one, too. But combining, you have to essentially get past that with thrust, which is what jets do. The bigger a thing is, the heavier it is, in order to overcome gravity and be able to fly, you have to input more thrust or lift.
Mm.
Now, with small animals, like, say, a hummingbird, they're tiny. They have very, very low mass. They have actually pretty short wings for their body size, and they can maneuver very, very quickly. But that's mainly because they are so small.
Yeah, like spiders.
Well, like sometimes, a very big spider, yes.
Well, sometimes you just see a spider kind of dangling through the air, caught on the breeze.
That's
going
fair.
To
yes.
Spider knows where. All right, keep
All
going.
Right. Now, if we look at birds, for examples, as they get bigger, it also becomes trickier for them to fly, too, even though they have been perfecting flight for millions and millions of years. The biggest birds, like condors, for example, or the albatross again, they are not particularly good at getting off the ground. And condors rely a lot purely off of updrafts in order to keep them aloft, which is also why they don't do a whole lot of flapping. Now, to get something that big up into the air, they have to do quite a bit of evolution in order to do it.
Mm.
Instead of having large wings, like physically size-wise, they have shorter, narrow wings, but longer. That helps them keep aloft. Also, their tails gradually become shorter as well compared to smaller birds. Smaller birds are able to have bigger tails and essentially bigger wings as well, thick-wise, because they do have less mass to worry about for the drag. It's because when you get more massive, drag becomes the major issue.
Okay.
Of keeping flight.
Okay.
Now, another thing that becomes a major issue is blood type. If you're a warm-blooded creature.
Not like A positive, B positive, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. No.
I was like, wait, what the heck?
But the type of blood that is in your body. Birds are warm-blooded.
Okay.
Warm blood is better at moving oxygen through your muscles.
Mm-hmm.
And because, again, it takes a lot of power in order to get lift off the ground, birds have to have that oxygen levels in order to do that. Birds are actually so well evolved that they actually have air sacs built off of their lungs, essentially, to help fuel their bodies with more oxygen even as they're exhaling, which is super crazy. And that evolution came about when there are still dinosaurs on the land.
Okay.
So, big issue for dragons. They're not warm-blooded. They honestly just do not have...
Which reptiles are just not.
Correct.
Is there reptiles any are not warm-blooded reptile out there that we know
nope.
of? Nope. Okay. All right. Good to know.
There are not any warm-blooded reptiles.
Okay.
So our dragon has to be warm-blooded in order to fly.
Wait, I have a question, though.
Okay.
This is just maybe an ignorance thing. Chickens, okay? Right? They're, a chicken.
Yeah, it's a bird.
A bird.
Yes.
That is the closest living relative to the Tyrannosaurus Rex, right? That's what we've decided.
Yeah, sure.
True science.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm not just making that up.
No.
I heard that somewhere, and it's sound. How did the chicken, a warm-blooded creature, come, a bird nonetheless, how did it come from a cold-blooded reptile? How did it, like, jump like that from reptile to bird? And on that note, could the dragon not simply be the missing link? between the Tyrannosaurus Rex and the chicken. Obviously, that part's not true. But how does that happen? How do you go? That's always been my thing. How do you go from being a reptile to a bird?
All right. So essentially, you're a raptor in between.
You're a raptor.
Yeah.
A velociraptor?
Sure. Velociraptors are from the same lineage, actual lineage of real modern birds. They're one and the same, essentially. And that's where, essentially, it works. Raptors are a type of theropod. So are rexes.
Okay.
Now, they're just specialized for different things.
Okay.
Rexes aren't the smartest creatures ever to roam the earth, but they were
one of the... peanut brain, right?
Yeah, but they were probably the largest predator that has ever probably roamed the actual earth. And it's theorized that they actually were the biggest. You can't get much bigger than a rex as far as what they're hunting and being fully terrestrial.
How big is a rex?
I don't know.
Dang.
Okay. I think it's like 35 feet.
35 feet. I want to say. Tall.
No, long.
Long. How tall?
I don't know, maybe 15.
15 feet, man. That's still 20, bigger than this entire
house.
It's
a big creature.
Dang.
It's a big creature.
Okay.
Go ahead. Anyway, essentially, raptors and rexes are cousins. Okay, you're following me?
Okay.
Rexes did have feathers, but they were essentially a evolution that took the line of, I want to hunt big things.
Okay. So, I think it's important.
Okay, that's fair.
I think so.
The evolution of the wing. Okay?
Okay.
So when we're looking at wings in general, a wing from a current bird is completely different than the wing of a raptor. Let's go with that. Or any kind of microraptor birds in transition, essentially.
But I also, velociraptors don't have wings. Is that what we're talking about now? Okay, go ahead. Right now. All right, go ahead.
So they did have feathers, though. And feathers are actually pretty helpful for a few different things. For something like a velociraptor or any small raptor, wings are actually, and just feathers on their forelimbs in general, are actually pretty handy because that allows them to essentially push themselves into, say, a higher angle, like onto a rocky slope or into a tree.
Okay.
And that's actually exactly how baby chicks run today. Is that even though they don't have fully formed wings yet, they actually use the little pathetic puny little wings in order to help keep traction against the surface that they're trying to run up. And that is the best scenario that scientists currently have for how essentially proto wings became true wings, is that they became even more better at pushing them into vertical launches and stuff like that and gliding.
See, that makes sense. That makes sense. Because that's the other question is, if a winged animal came from a wingless animal, which according to evolution, it would have to. Why'd that wing happen?
Because there's an advantage to being able to climb up to taller surfaces, taller areas, when everything else is around you is much bigger that wants to eat you.
True that. Okay.
So escaping predation is actually probably the easiest and more likely answer to why wings started to become wings. Now, unfortunately, raptors and other dinosaurs eventually lost the use of their digits, and they essentially melded together into their forelimb of a bird. And again, that forelimb is just more rigid. Mm. It has the feathers leading off of it. So... that was a rabbit hole there. Thank you.
I loved it. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. So essentially, proto wings were really meant to keep traction on the ground and to help our young birds to not get eaten.
Okay.
For the most part.
Right.
Or for gliding.
Okay.
Okay. So
I appreciate that. Back to the wyverns.
Back to the wyverns here.
We're back.
And apparently, wyverns are super good at finding platinum and mining it with their teeth. That is the catalyst for why they can spark the methane hydrogen gas in order to breathe fire.
I always thought it was just like flint,
but it's a little rough.
Because, like, you know, chickens, right? Back to chickens.
Yeah, back to chickens. Okay.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah.
Back to chickens. Chickens,
you hungry?
they're eaten, and they get some rocks in there, right? And then those rocks grind up the food. Makes it easily digestible and all of that in the gizzard. Why doesn't a dinosaur just do the same thing.
Yeah, like, actually, animals throughout time have done a lot of the same thing with just stones in general. It helps aid digestion.
Why does it have to be platinum?
I think platinum was chemically is how it lights.
Interesting. Because I'm pretty sure supposedly, you could just spark by hitting like.
Right. Yeah. They didn't give a really full reasoning to it.
That's fair.
But I love the idea that this dragon can just fly around and be like, "Oh, there's platinum over there."
Well, and it does
smells it.
It does kind of course, add to the idea, right, of the dragon liking the precious metals, the jewels, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on board.
Right. Okay.
I believe
it. So unfortunately for us, the wyvern version of the dragon died out in the KT mass extinction, just like all other large dinosaurs of the time.
Pour one out.
I know, right?
Pour one out
for
the dinos.
It's sad.
Not the wyverns.
Yeah. Anyway. But luckily for us, a different evolution also took the same exact route.
Okay.
Now we actually get to talk about a little bit of the hexapod dragons that are plaguing Western cultures.
Yes.
So now bear with me here.
Oh.
The unfortunate thing is a creature with six limbs is not possible. Not on our Earth. Not yet, at least.
All right. You're coming out with your fighting words.
I am. Because it's unfortunately true.
Here's the thing.
All
I'm not
terrestrial
emotionally...
creatures, all vertebrates, I'm getting there, have one common ancestor that came out of the primordial oceans.
Right, the soups. Yes.
Yes. And that creature is Tiktaalik. It is a descendant of a lobe... Yes, it's a lobe fish, which essentially means that they have really bony fins. And they crawled out of the ooze... and eventually became all vertebrates known now and previously because they had four fins that eventually became four full limbs. Okay? Now, for us to have a six-limbed creature, we have to have essentially a cousin of Tiktaalik, which I like to call Toktaalik.
What is that?
TikTok.
Okay.
TikTok-talic.
Okay. All right.
It's great, right?
TikTok.
It's awful.
Yep. That's terrible.
So
go
we
ahead.
Have to have a creature of essentially the same exact lineage of all known vertebrates now, but having six fins and six limbs. If that were to happen, though, and if, of course, it hasn't because we haven't found any fossil records of anything like that ever.
Okay.
Something would be around if there was. But if there was, then that opens the floodgates to. Like Pegasus and dragons of the cultures that we love.
Smaug.
No, Smaug is
the Defiler.
Is also a wyvern in the movie.
Is he?
Yes,
no,
he is.
No, he's not.
He's a wyvern.
No, because they say Smaug the Fire Drake.
He's a wyvern.
I really don't think he is.
I guarantee it.
To be fair, I don't really watch the Hobbit movies.
I don't
blame
you.
They disappointed me.
They did.
Okay.
Anyway. So, like, Drogon? No, Drogon was also a wyvern. Never mind. Wyverns count. Wyverns win. But
yeah,
also,
okay.
Things like griffins, hippogriffs.
Yes,
it allows for
a
lot more mythological creatures to actually physically exist. You know, humanoids that had, you know, four arms. It actually allows that kind of thing to really exist, which is really cool. Now, unfortunately, it's not going to be true, but it's pretty awesome. What I love about Last Dragon is that apparently that species of dragon also used the exact same method to breathe fire as essentially the Tiktaalik descendant of dragons as well.
All right.
So we have convergent evolution, which is normal. It happens. Back to, say, like Megalodon. Megalodon's tooth looks very, very similar to Great White's, which is how we figured out that it wasn't the tongue of a dragon or a giant serpent. It was actually something that swam in the sea. The actual shape of it looks a lot like a great white.
Okay.
Now, there are some specific characteristics that do change. For Megalodon, their teeth are way more jagged around the edges, the serratedness of it. They're also, at the base of it, a lot more bowed. When you look at a great white shark's, it's very, very flat at the base, and the serrations are very, very perfect. They're very identical to one another and look really, really clean.
Okay.
But that's just convergent evolution showing you essentially, the product to do one very, very specific type of task.
Okay.
Now, that being said, a methane bladder could arise.
Okay.
but using platinum as well as that to be your Kickstarter for catalyzing and creating fire is a little weird.
It's
so
very
that is my criticism there.
I prefer to
there.
Think that it would probably just use rocks and like or flint, something like that.
I have a bit more explosive take on it. So what I would like to think is forego the whole system to where you'd have to have a methane or this weird almost pseudo-respiratory system of a new methane bladder and a weird way to spark fire.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, just have some really cool glands. Now, where I'm getting with this is that there is a liquid that, when it actually makes contact with oxygen in the air, essentially combusts. Okay. And that liquid is called, and I'm going to butcher it. Where do I have it? Here it is. Lithium? Butyllithium?
Wow, that sucked.
It's rough.
That's bad.
It's rough.
Okay.
But anyway, essentially, mimic the same exact evolution that we have with, like, spitting cobras.
Okay.
They're able to shoot out poison from the glands in the back of their head through their teeth. Just do the same thing with fire in this liquid.
May I offer
an interjection?
Another idea.
How would you like your dragons to breathe fire, Sam?
This is how I would like them to breathe fire. I completely understand that this isn't how any of this works. Let's say that a dragon was very much like a particle accelerator. Instead of having a methane bladder, it was able to create tiny little bits of antimatter and then hold them in a vacuum in the neck.
Dear Lord.
And then somehow, I don't know, I'm not a scientist, don't ask me how, somehow it simply spits that antimatter out, keeping it within a vacuum until it's in a safe space. And then, of course, the natural process of annihilation wherein antimatter and matter collide, creating an explosion.
So it's like
multiple times that
of
Hiroshima.
It's like the blast of a blue eyes white dragon.
Yes, exactly. And therefore, right, the ancients, unable to comprehend how such destruction could come without fire, their minds simply filled in the blank with a jet stream of fire. But in reality, it's just shooting particles everywhere.
All right. I like it.
What do you think about that?
That's a very fringe theory there,
I
Sam.
Literally just it's, came up with it as I was
great.
Sitting here. All right. Jason's got his little theory.
I like it, man.
What's
I like
my
it
theory
going to
be? All right. Thank you. Thank you. That sounds like something, I don't know.
That sounds you like, don't know? Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Okay, cool.
So from there, I just want to talk about maybe building a better dragon.
Yes.
Because we've already
have the technology.
We've already been talking about it.
And antimatter bombs.
I'd like to look at one pterosaur that has, at least for the moment, it is the biggest flying vertebrate ever to roam Earth. Quetzalcoatlus, which is named after Quetzalcoatl.
My boy.
Which is...
Quetzalcoatl is the feathered serpent, feathered winged serpent of Central American lore.
Yeah, it's an Aztec god.
Also known as Kukulcan.
How do you know what its second name is?
That was its name in the Mayan, was Kukulcan.
Oh, okay.
In the Aztec, it was Quetzalcoatl.
I love it. A lot like...
My boy!
Like Asian culture, Quetzalcoatl was actually a good force on the Aztec people. It taught them agriculture and brought them favor until they thought Quetzalcoatl was reborn as...
Cortez.
As Cortez.
If you gotta, like, that might be one of the worst.
They're like, hey, let's welcome Quetzalcoatl back. And Cortez killed everyone.
Worst misconceptions in history right there.
Yeah, that was rough for them. I think that was a big...
But one day,
oops.
Quetzalcoatl will return.
Exactly.
I don't know how, but he's gonna do it.
Yeah, probably on ships with sails in minutes.
We don't even
armor.
Have ships with sails anymore.
I know, I'm saying Cortez probably was.
So what you're saying... Whoa!
That's
a hot take.
What brought... And created also destroys.
Okay, all right.
It's all big circle, man. All right, so backpedaling again. Let's talk about Quetzalcoatlus a little bit.
Okay.
The pterodon, pterosaur.
Okay.
Not the god, okay?
Oh, okay.
So imagine a pterosaur the size of a giraffe.
That's a hard distinction. With or without the neck?
It has actually a really large neck. So yeah, with the neck.
That makes me want to scream just thinking about it.
Exactly.
That
spooked
me. It was
the largest flying creature ever to exist. And scientists still don't know exactly how it did fly.
But it did fly.
That's what we believe. And we actually have some pretty good theories about the range that this thing was able to do. It could essentially stay aloft for about a week at a time, which means it could travel over entire oceans. It's terrifying, right?
There's like a bead of sweat rolling down my forehead.
Quetzalcoatlus is an incredible creature. Now, the only problem with Quetzalcoatlus is that physically it doesn't match up for what we know to require flight. Again, it's huge. It's a massive creature, which means it has a massive amount of drag involved.
Mm-hmm.
And getting lift is a really big issue, just launching off the ground. Scientists actually found a really cool way, and probably the correct way that pterosaurs were actually able to fly, though, and launch themselves. Birds today essentially get a running or a leaping start most of the time. But essentially, pterosaurs would do what scientists call a quad launch, which they are literally using their back legs to vault off of their front legs in order to push themselves into the air. So it's literally a full body motion of leaping and then spraying their limbs so that they can actually start to flap and fly away. So Quetzalcoatlus is the largest creature that we know to fly. That being said, it doesn't have a tail. Again, because of being so massive, you have to start making sacrifices to the rest of your body. To be very, very, very hyper good at one specific thing, you have to be bad at a lot of other stuff. So Quetzalcoatlus is a huge creature, but like other pterosaurs or other dinosaurs, it does not have a tail at all. It has a little nub of one. To call it a tail is pretty pathetic.
I feel like if we're making the caveat, right, because that's always one of the biggest things, a dragon could never fly. If a dragon existed, a dragon could never fly. It's too big. It's too heavy. But if we're going to say that this thing, the size of a giraffe, could fly, and then say that the reason a dragon can't fly is because it has a tail, I feel like we're just being exclusionary at this point.
That's one of my reasons.
All right.
The Quetzalcoatlus sacrificed having a tail, and so did a lot of other large pterodons. The small ones kept theirs because it didn't really matter. Again, just like with large condors, they have a shorter tail. They have to be very specifically built for flying, and you have to sacrifice quite a bit to get there. Also, even though, yes, it was as tall as a giraffe, its actual physical body was much smaller. We have estimates saying that it's stuff roughly around 70 kilograms, which is about the quarter of a weight of a giraffe.
All right. That's fair.
And had hollow bones as well.
Dragons would weigh tons.
Right.
Okay.
The idea of the dragons that we have weigh tons. Right?
Yes.
So Quetzalcoatlus is very, very specialized. And a lot of pterodons are very specialized. Now the fun part. If we go to the late Jurassic, there's actually one dinosaur that is essentially a wyvern.
Okay.
It was discovered in 2015 in China.
Nice.
It's called Yi Chi, which literally means weird wing.
Nice, nice.
Now, what's awesome about this little creature...
I support that naming.
Right?
Philosophy.
What's awesome about this creature is that it had a membranous wing.
Okay.
Membranous ring. Well, there we go.
Yeah. Its wing was a membrane.
Yes. It had skin over its wings.
Yeah.
It also had feathers. It had both.
Okay.
Its actual hand structure is very, very similar to that we see in proto birds, being essentially you have longer digits that are very close together. But what differs is that it actually uses one of its, and this is so strange how it could have possibly evolved to do this, but one of its wrist bones is actually incredibly elongated to be the main part of its wing.
Okay.
And I actually have an image for
you. Okay, yeah, show
it to me. Just for you.
Show it to
because
me.
Because no one else can see
it. We'll put this in the show notes.
No, it's just for you.
No, no, no. We're going to put this in the show notes.
Just for you.
All right, I guess it's just for me.
For you.
These dinosaurs. While you're pulling that up, I'd like to tell you about... Oh, wait. Here we go. Jason. Crappy dragon, but it's still a dragon.
It's a dragon.
It's a dragon, even though it sucks.
What sucks about it is that it's the size of a pigeon.
Oh, man.
And it could not do powered flight.
Oh, man.
It glided.
Oh, man.
But... we have some pretty good hints. So say if we took...
the size of a pigeon?
It was the size
of a pigeon.
That's
like something out of Spy Kids. That's terrible.
It ate... Spy Kids 2, The Lost World one?
Yeah, yeah. When he has like the tiny little... Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Anyway, we actually can figure out its diet was primarily going to be insects because of the way that its bill is, or its mouth is actually shaped. It's very, very similar to that of a bat. Which is also kind of cool.
So anyway, is this guy where bat came from?
No. Because bats essentially came from probably gliding marsupials or small gliding animals, mammals. Okay. This is still a full-blown reptile, which is the cool thing about it. But again, it has essentially bat-like wings and feathers at the same time.
Now, you've heard me talking about videoblocks.com for a few weeks now, but... they have outdone themselves again and come out with a brand new offer for the listeners of the Not Alone podcast, valid for this holiday season only. Now, for the same price that you'd pay to access VideoBlock's huge library of stock video footage, you now get access to all three of the StoryBlocks media libraries. Now, that's right. For just $149, you can get access, all the access to your heart's content of not only video, but also stock audio and still image content, all included in that one price of your subscription, essentially tripling the value of your StoryBlock subscription. You're going to be able to get literally hundreds of thousands of images, audio, and video clips, all included with the price of that subscription, as well as huge discounts on any premium clips, anything out of their creator libraries. And you can feel good about it because anything that you do end up paying for, that money goes right into the pocket of the creator themselves. Using the StoryBlocks.com media libraries, there is no reason that your production has to look anything less than the absolute best it can. Everything from B-roll footage to entire sound theme scores for your production are all available under this amazing deal at this amazing price. But it's only good through the holiday season, only good through December. So make sure you jump over as soon as you can, as soon as you hear this message, just open it up on your smartphone, tablet, desktop, laptop, Apple Watch, I don't care. Just go to videoblocks.com/notalone. That's videoblocks.com/notalone. I guarantee it's not only worth your time, it's worth your money, and it is going to take your production from being a amateur labor of love, well-intentioned, but definitely a hobby, and make it into something that can compete and stand out from the crowd of other independent content creators out there. So head on over. Again, that's videoblocks.com/notalone. I guarantee it's worth it. All right, let's get back to the show.
So let's say we take Ichi. All right, let's make a real dragon, shall we?
Okay.
Let's take Ichi.
Okay.
This teeny tiny little dinosaur, and let's massively blow it up.
Okay, yeah, it's got to be big.
Yeah, it's got to be big.
We got to get rid of those feathers.
We got to get rid of the feathers. And we also already kind of have something to take the place. Avian feathers. Essentially, they have avian scales as well, which are very, very densely compact versions of feathers, which is kind of cool. It's what we see on the feet of birds today.
Okay.
We can do essentially the same thing with the feathers on Ichi here. So let's go ahead and assume that that is what happens.
Okay.
Now, from there, we also have to overcome the inability of actual powered flight.
Okay.
All right. So, easiest way to do that. Not necessarily big, strong arms. Big, strong pectoral muscles.
Yes.
Got to build the chest, baby. And because of that,
chest day, little birdie.
We have to have a better, probably, respiratory system than what this little guy probably had.
Okay.
Which means bigger heart. Bigger heart. Bigger chest muscles, bigger lungs,
mm-hmm.
to support the blood flow that's going to be needed in order to do power flight. And, well, it probably has to become warm-blooded to do that, too.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Otherwise, Yichi, say, with those upgrades, is now able to fly. Okay. Right? So now it comes down to the problem of what would make it get big? Why would being big be beneficial?
Okay.
Well, if Yichi got a little bit bigger and, say, started hunting maybe small rodents, small mammals,
yeah,
then Yichi being able to fly, and also with the design of its actual hands and wing being part of its wrist joint, is probably a pretty maneuverable creature.
Okay.
Now, if we take that power of flight, we start eating, say, again, small rodents. That's a big increase from the insects that we believe he probably ate.
Right.
And then if he keeps getting bigger, we start to get to a balance point, essentially. The thing is, small predators are fine with eating small foods. Once you get into a larger predatory state, you have to start eating big stuff.
Okay.
Bigger than what you are. You have to start taking down massive amounts of food.
Yeah.
The reason being,
like a woolly mammoth.
Is, okay, we're not quite there. I'm still in the Jurassic.
Okay, all right.
Maybe, yeah, well, I'm still way back in time.
Okay.
But sure, we'll fast forward, take Yichi into the Ice Age, because that makes more sense for
sure,
us.
Sure, why not?
That will work, all right? Yichi is now in the Ice Age.
He's killing woolly mammoths in his spare time.
And let's think about it. So let's take it as Yichi, and let's use the example of wolves. Wolves hunt in packs to take down bigger creatures. Why? Because if a wolf tried eating a rodent, it would eat a rodent and be like, okay, I'm still hungry. And it'll go eat another rodent and still be hungry, and still be hungry, and still be hungry. It won't ever really satisfy itself.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get big, you have to start eating bigger prey.
Okay.
That is so that, for one, you don't expel too much energy in actually the hunt.
Okay.
That's one of the big things. That, and hunts are dangerous. There's a lot to go wrong as a predator.
That's true.
And if you're hunting multiple times a day or a week, for instance, well, you're probably going to be injuring yourself more often than something that would just hunt once a week or with a pack or something.
Okay. More chances to die.
Yeah, more things go wrong. It's safer to eat a big thing.
Right.
It's like us. I mean, when you think about it, if you go to the grocery store and get like a week's worth of food,
right,
we're usually a lot happier than going out to go to the grocery store every day.
Right. Right.
Now, Yichi has to start eating something pretty big. Let's go ahead and say your woolly mammoth is our target.
Okay.
Yichi has to get very, very large in order to start taking down that kind of prey.
But still smaller than a woolly mammoth.
But probably still smaller than a woolly mammoth. Okay. Exactly. So to get big and still be able to fly, Yichi has to start making some sacrifices.
Okay.
Yichi's tail, probably going to get almost non-existent, if anything. And already it has a pretty darn small tail.
Mm-hmm.
From there, it's probably going to have much, much larger wings in order to sustain its body in flight.
Okay.
So we have to blow up this thing to be massive. If we're trying to take down mammoths, it probably has to have like a 35-foot wingspan to keep it aloft while hunting.
That's even bigger than Mothman.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
Dang.
Now, here's the question. Does Yichi still have teeth, or does it have a beak?
I vote teeth.
You vote teeth. Okay. So
because teeth are scarier than beaks.
They are. But teeth, when biting down into large prey, put a lot more possible stress on the skull itself. Beaks evolved to actually minimize that on the skull itself.
On the skull?
On the skull.
All right.
Is that you happy?
Go ahead.
On the skull.
Oh, okay.
There it is.
I'm going to kill you.
When you bite down on big prey, that puts a lot more tension with teeth on your actual skull itself.
Okay.
With beaks, it actually helps stabilize and mitigate that factor.
That's interesting.
I want
to
dragons to still have teeth, though.
Oh, so yeah.
Dragons have teeth.
To me, I feel like the beak is like an easier thing to break than the tooth. But maybe I'm just wrong.
It's actually the physical skull itself. So essentially, like the nasal cavity,
right?
The actual stress that you're putting on the rest of your skull versus your mandible.
Okay, all right, all right.
I still say
I'm clenching
teeth
my jaw
because teeth
right
are
now.
So much better.
Yeah, dude, they're scarier.
Yeah, teeth are better.
Okay.
Now here's the catch. He still has to be a wyvern. I can't give him four legs.
As a kid, I thought the wyverns were lame, and now I realize they are not lame. They are still pretty dope because they are still dragons.
Yeah, so. And to be honest, if we're looking at a six-limbed dragon, the only thing I can think of it using its actual wings for is maybe swimming. Because if we are taking consider weight and drag,
right,
another pair of limbs,
it's just gonna slow
keeps
it down.
You on the ground.
I always have a problem with bats and with things though because they don't have hands. I mean, technically, I guess, but
they do. They do have hands.
They're just weird hands, and
right.
And I just can't imagine a life without my hands. That's all.
That's totally fair.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
But bats are cool because, well, essentially, bats grew into their niche in order to hunt the insects that went to night after birds came about.
Okay. All right.
Which is what's fun about bats. That and their crazy echolocation abilities, and again, how maneuverable they are because they use their finger digits.
How they respond when you kill their parents. Yeah.
Are you talking about Batman?
Okay. Yes.
All right.
Okay. Yeah, bats are interesting. I used to love bats, and then one time a bat flew into the wall of my cabin, and its head came through. It was still alive. Its head came through, and it started squeaking at me, and ever since then, I've been terrified of bats.
Poor little bat.
We hit the bat with a bat. Somehow, instead of that popping it back out, we were trying to kill it. Instead of it popping it back out, somehow it popped it in. And then there was a bat in the cabin squeaking, and I was freaking out. And I really hate bats a whole lot.
That's fair.
We did at Disney World, we did see Malaysian flying foxes.
That's so
cool. Which are unfreaking real. I have seen so many pictures of Malaysian flying foxes, and I have always said, I don't care what you tell me, this is a fake picture of a fake animal. And then I went and I saw one for real life, and it was majestic.
Incredible.
It was so cool. I don't think of that as a bat. I think of that as a literal flying fox because it is huge.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's about as big as bats can really get now.
Yeah.
So back to our dragon.
Okay.
Sam, how are you feeling about our new wyvern?
I mean, I can love him and support him and
his
life decisions.
The Yi-Chi Plus is what I'm going to call
him. Yeah, yeah.
He's the bigger, badder version.
Okay, all right.
But that is essentially how a dragon would evolve on Earth. We would take essentially a creature similar to this and slowly upgrade it. That being said, it wouldn't be the same size as Smaug. It wouldn't be able to get there.
It's not town-sized, yes.
It's not the size of a town.
Okay.
And I think our more modern pop culture has kind of blown dragons out of proportion a little bit because of that.
I think that if you look at the ancient lore, there's a good amount of dragons that are very large. There's a, I can't remember one, but there's this famous worm that basically wraps itself around a hill.
Okay, yeah. I believe it's a Scottish.
Something.
Scottish or English.
Yeah.
But dragons have always been
very, very big.
But see, here's the great thing is that, again, that isn't a winged dragon.
Right.
A dragon, again, is a term that has been placed on essentially giant beasts that cause chaos and destruction.
Well, and especially reptilian.
Yeah, reptilian in nature. Okay. I think it really comes down to the fact that for us, again, evolving and other primates as well, primates are terrified of snakes because snakes are dangerous.
Okay.
I think reptiles in general, because they are so different than what we are, we automatically become at least not just fearful of snakes, but fearful of them as well.
Do you know that the human eye can see more shades of green than any other color?
That's awesome.
And do you know why?
Snakes and leaves?
Snakes. Mm-hmm.
That's terrifying.
There's like this amazing... I heard it once. I don't remember it fully, basically. But essentially, it's called snake detection theory, which is essentially what I just told you.
Mm-hmm.
But then it takes it to like a broader thing about how we would not be beyond just like, oh, our eyes see color in this way, which is cool. But it was able to make an even further logical argument that we just would not be the humans we are today without the snake acting as like a direct opponent to us and a catalyst for evolution. It's very interesting stuff.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So I think we've got our wyvern down.
I agree.
Right?
I agree.
Getting big, you have to eat bigger things.
Okay.
Which is pretty crazy. I like to think that maybe they would not get the same size as Quetzalcoatlus, or maybe they did not get bigger. But what if, what really terrifies me is that, what if dragons actually stayed about the size of wolves and were pack hunters?
Yes. That's, and then they could break into your house at night.
That's horrible.
Yeah, that is scary.
Doesn't that sound awful? Can you imagine a flock of dragons taking down an elk or like a moose or something?
Yes.
Oh, man. It'd be ridiculous.
It's a beautiful thing.
Right? It's terrifying. So we talked about how we can take an actual winged creature and create a dragon. Let's talk about taking a serpent and creating a dragon.
Okay.
Now, as far as serpentine dragons go, and being able to fly, that's, well, kind of far-fetched, right?
Well, I suppose.
Sort of.
If you don't believe in magic. I have seen videos of flying snakes before.
You're referring to the gliding snakes.
And it's terrible.
Those are from Asia.
Yes.
They actually do a very cool little trick.
That's what I'm saying.
Which snakes absolutely have the best abdominals muscles in the entire animal kingdom.
They have like a 72-pack.
Yeah, exactly. They use it for everything. But what's incredible about the gliding snakes is that they use their abdominals in order to spread their rib cage out and essentially become almost disc shape in body. So they flatten themselves out so that when they essentially kind of, like when you think of sidewinder snakes, you know how they kind of move through the sand?
Yeah.
They do a very similar thing just through the sky, and they can glide actually pretty far distances.
Oh my gosh. That's terrible.
What's the next step for that snake if it really wants to fly? What do you think? Do you have an idea?
Magic?
Magic? Okay. So magic's a decent idea.
Anti-grav technology?
What about just larger scales?
Is that going to let it fly, though?
Maybe.
Who knows? Why not?
If we are building another serpentine flying dragon, I think the gliding snakes are probably the closest thing that we already have.
Right.
And if you give it a little bit more surface area, it might be able to actually fly that way with some larger scales on the side of its body.
Right.
Now, you can't say, like, extend the rib cage of it because, well, then it's just going to have a tough time climbing up trees or constricting or really moving at all on the ground. And you would have to be in the air constantly for it to actually, like, fly. But yeah, if it got larger scales, and when it flattened out, those scales, per se, just gave it a little bit more surface area, more of a fin-type shape to them, they might be able to travel farther or maybe even fly with some really good ab workouts.
Maybe, okay.
Now, as far as getting big as a snake, that becomes trickier. Mainly because big snakes, again, need big prey. They also need, and a lot of times, snakes don't particularly eat huge things.
Right.
When we think of snakes, the most common ones essentially eat fish, or they eat frogs, rodents, things of very, very small stature, nothing gigantic.
Right.
So the snake itself would have to want to up the ante, essentially, which is a little bit more dangerous when we go from frogs and fish into, say, boars, you know, wild pigs, something of that nature. But theoretically, I guess it could sort of be done.
Mm-hmm.
But that's my best kind of example of how we could take a living creature now and maybe allow it to fly a bit.
Okay, all right.
Yeah?
Okay.
You feeling it a little
bit? Sure. I just don't think they can fly without wings.
It'd be tough to, but nature does some pretty crazy stuff.
That is true. Okay.
All right, so we've covered real wyverns. We've covered Yichi.
Yes.
We've talked quite a bit about dragons in general. Okay. How do you feel? Did I destroy them?
No, I think I don't think you destroyed them by any means, because I don't think that you wanted to.
I don't.
Because the dragon is a beautiful thing. So are you at the end of your dragon section, would you say?
I am. So what do you have for us?
I appreciate the hard work you've done. I do. It is my great displeasure to have to tell you that it was all for nothing.
You found a dragon.
I found.
What did you find?
It's not that I found anything. It's that I know of a man. I have known of a man for a very long time. Have you ever heard of an individual? I need to finish this beer before I even say this man's name. Have you ever heard of a man named David Icke?
Why does that sound familiar? Why? Who is that?
David Icke used to be in the 90s, well, pre-90s, mid to pre-90s.
What do you mean, like 80s?
I guess. He was a respectable footballer, not football player, a footballer, as in someone who plays soccer, as we would call
it. The rest of the world hates us now.
I know, and that's fine. And a sports broadcaster. He was a very... I mean, I don't know him personally, but I assume that he was fine.
Well, shoot, should I finish my beer too?
Sometime in the 90s, something happened to him. I don't know exactly what it was. But something happened to him wherein David Icke became the recipient of what can only be the actual truth of the situation. Now... have you heard of...
Just tell me about things, Sam. You're killing me.
Have you heard of the New World Order, Jason?
Tell me about the New World
the
Order,
New
Sam.
The New World Order, and we'll get into all of this at
tell
a later date.
Tell me about
date.
The NWA.
As NWO. Oh. The NWA is a very different thing.
Tell me about that, too.
Well, there's a gentleman named Ice Cube. So the NWO is essentially... a shadowy group, also known by the names of the Illuminati, Rosicrucians,
I knew
Freemasons.
You'd throw something into my Jason special.
So I
what
had
do you
to.
Got?
The New World Order is here to enslave us, to turn us into cattle, essentially, for this greater powers that be. And of course, the New World Order is ran by what are known as
dragons.
The reptilians.
Ah!
Now, the reptilians...
The humanoid reptiles, because everything is humanoid.
The reptilians hail from the stars. One of them's called Draco, I'm pretty sure. Isn't there a star Draco?
There is a constellation.
There's a constellation Draco. So
I remember
one of
that
the stars,
from Dragonheart.
Right? One of the stars within Draco. They hail from there. Now, David Icke believes that the Hebrew word used in Genesis... to denote snake in the garden does not translate to snake. David Icke tells us that that word literally translates to an upright reptilian humanoid walking on two legs. So we can see...
So you're telling me that snakes have just been having a bad rap.
Exactly.
For the last 2,000 years.
We can see that ever since the Garden of Eden... the dragons have been among us, trying to control us. Now, there is...
So this, again, is not like a dragon in pop culture terms. This is, again, a reptile.
It is a reptile. It is a dragon.
That brings chaos and destruction.
Correct. So, exactly. So...
All right.
The dragon has... All right. The dragon has been with us since the garden. Not the snake, but the dragon. From there... the dragons ruled over the old world, the old world, the world of Abraham and or the world of Noah and all of that.
Yeah, when God was mean.
Back in the Old Testament, way Old Testament. And then there was, of course, the flood. Now, what essentially happened is somehow, and I'm sure that he has some kind of message, but honestly, I can pretty much guess what it is. It's spaceships. Somehow, the reptilians... they survived the flood.
Why didn't they just go underground?
And, well, that's another good point of it. So the other idea is that the reptilians did not necessarily come from a star in the Draco star system, but rather that they were here all along and that we, by our evolution, did force them underground. And then they came back out and have been ruling us in secret. Essentially, the flood happens. The dragons interbreed with each other. Just keep the bloodlines pure, you know. And right. They do this for, at this point, 6,000 years.
Just like the Targaryens.
To the point where nowadays, there are many reptilians in the world nowadays. You have Barack Obama, of course. Hillary Clinton, of course. You have Barack Obama's bodyguard in a video that I once saw, of course. But you also have, more importantly, the Queen. The Queen of England. The British bloodline is all reptiles all the way down. Okay, so this is what David Icke believes. This is what I don't believe. But this is why his point is as well. This is why all of humanity has these dragon myths because the ancients are trying to tell us something. They're trying to warn us of this terrible, cruel power that exists within us now. Now, this isn't necessarily like the reptilians, like in our listener special, right? Rob saw a small reptilian creature. This wouldn't necessarily be that. This is a larger than life humanoid. Sometimes they are humanoid reptiles. Other times I have heard them described and read them described as literal dragons, drakes.
Okay.
Not even wyverns, drakes that are 50 feet in size coming from the stars. But that's why you're wrong, Jason. Do you have a rebuttal to that?
So, yeah, I do. I listened to literally about a quarter of that.
That's fair.
And I think that's the only rebuttal I need.
All right. That's fair. So that's David Icke, and that's all we're going to say about him. Do not ask us to talk more about David Icke. We will not be covering David Icke. He's awful.
That's an idea. That's
very bad. To be fair, that was the dumbed down version of David Icke. There's a lot more complexity. He has authored over 25 books, God. I think, on this subject.
Okay. Yeah.
One of them, actually, just speaking objectively, I think it's called like Mankind, Get Off Your Knees, and it's talking about like taking power back from the reptilians. But the cover art for that book is a lion, right? But the lion's face is the earth. It's super good. It's the cool. If I was going to get a tattoo,
next time I want to do acid.
Right? There you go.
That's
so,
how I'll do it.
That's the first and last time we're ever going to mention David Icke on this podcast. Wow. Thank you very much. All right. So there's that. That was my only. Also,
staining my special.
in another unrelated note to David Icke, there is also a dinosaur known as the Dracorex Hogwartsia.
I'm going to literally cut my wrists.
Which is the dragon king of Hogwarts. Basically, you know the Pachyosaurus or whatever, the dome dudes?
Yeah.
So they found a really messed up one of those to the point where the skull looks like the skull of a stereotypical dragon. It's actually really cool. And sweet. We'll put it in the show notes. So they presented it, I think it was like to the Indianapolis Children's Museum. And the visitors to the museum voted to name it the Dracorex Hogwartsia. Yes, the Dragon King of Hogwarts. So, despite what Jason may have just told you, dragons are real, and they are simply a misclassification of the Pachyosaurus. So, all right.
I'm pretty sure,
let me double check my notes, but I'm pretty sure that's all I had.
Okay.
Is those two things.
That's lovely.
I did put the thing about chickens eating rocks.
Cool.
So we talked about that.
You got that. Check.
Oh, rhino horns. Also, rhino horns, they used to think were dragon scales and dragon talons and dragon teeth.
That's great.
There was, I actually read an article about it in, I think it was in 14 Times.
Sounds like a wonderful little scam there as well.
Yeah, well, it was essentially that like, no, it wasn't even in 14 Times. It was using my newspapers.org subscription. I found this newspaper from like 1894. No, so it was this article from like a newspaper in 1894 talking about how like people would do these, they would sell dragon bones essentially at uh-huh. high prices, dragon uh-huh. bones, dragon teeth. And when it came down to it, they found that it was rhinoceros skeletons and especially their horns that were just being ground up and sold as dragons. So,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
People do some
although you some do have to you, well you have to ask these people because it's primarily in like not like just less technologically advanced provinces of like China that this was happening. You have to wonder if that's what they probably actually believe, the people selling it, maybe saying like, oh yeah, this is dragon, because 1890 whatever, that's still, I mean, that's just before our modern like
Science, I guess.
No, I guess not. 1700s.
I guess there are, you know,
dragons in the world
some
today.
Pseudoscience,
yes.
In medicines, yes. in the Orient that I honestly think it's just a bad stereotyping now, probably.
That's what I'm worried about with like even bringing that up.
Right.
Is the stereotype. But at the same time, people do poach. Like, you know, the pangolin, my friend, the plucky little pangolin.
Yeah. The always nervous about stuff. Mm-hmm. Little animals.
I love him so much. He's so super cute. Endangered.
Yep.
Because they, you know, people poach pangolins.
Sand slash.
Yeah, pretty much. they poach pangolins and they grind their scales up and sell it as like aphrodisiacs. So.
That's funny because their scales are just again hardened. It's just for
creatine. Yeah.
Yeah, that's all it is.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, speaking cool. of stuff like that and okay. selling things.
Okay.
The next thing I want to cover in our flashback to medieval cryptozoology.
Yeah.
Are unicorns.
Hey now.
I know, right?
What you got against unicorns?
I have absolutely
They were in Blade Runner.
Nothing against unicorns, but I do want to talk about them because unicorns are probably one of the greatest scams ever for the Middle Ages. It is so super sweet.
Okay.
All right. So unicorns, the idea of a unicorn came up in the Indus River Valley first. And in correlation with unicorns themselves, there was actually a species of rhinoceros that went extinct during the end of the last ice age. Now, what's sweet about that rhinoceros is it actually had, it's a little bit smaller than most like woolly mammoths that we think of, and it wasn't very hairy at all. But it did have a gigantic horn in the middle of its head.
Nice.
Not at the nose, but the middle, which is really cool. And it also was in the Indus River Valley in Asia as well, the lower European area. So it's thought that this could have been the catalyst, the start of the unicorn. And I think that actually has some credence because horses today are not what horses originally were 8,000 years ago, 10,000 years ago. Horses were actually a lot stubbier. They're mm-hmm. shorter, thicker. The closest horse that we have to today to that species of horse was probably more along the lines of the Mongolian horses, which are, again, a lot more stout
right.
in stature. And that's actually one of the reasons why chariot warfare became so prominent in the Bronze Age, is that horses just, we had not bred them to be big enough to really carry
right.
A man in armor or weaponry for a period of time. So chariots became the main way to move about for warfare.
Okay.
It's an expensive way to do warfare, but nonetheless, it
warfare
was a way.
Warfare nonetheless, yeah.
So when you take an idea of saying that this rhinoceros that did go extinct, it kind of looks like just a shorter, even stubbier version of a horse anyway.
All right.
And Marco Polo himself said that he saw a unicorn, which really, in Java, which was really a Javan rhino. So they do get
Let's
mistaken.
Let's just remember that Marco Polo has been not even just like proven to be like, oh, I misconstrued something I saw, but rather quite full of it at certain times.
Yeah, but also Marco Polo does have the second most popular book in like all of history.
Yeah, I'm not saying, and maybe that's why, because he had absolutely no problem saying, dragons? I've seen dragons. I've seen unicorns. I was at the court of the Kublai Khan. He's doing his thing.
Not dude, saying I'm that, so that the, jealous of Marco Polo's oh, dude, life. He had a if great I could have lived Marco Polo's life, it would have been
well,
amazing.
He had an interesting life.
It was, yeah, it was interesting for sure.
All right.
Anyway, so back to unicorns.
Yes.
Which are also a statement of nobility in medieval times as well.
And the national animal of Scotland.
Oh, Scotland, you don't have a real national animal. That's so sad.
I'm sure our Scottish listeners will be happy to kick your butt. So.
That's absolutely fine.
Their animal is beautiful.
It is beautiful, okay. And it's not real.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, so
it doesn't matter if it's real.
Treading back to rhinos and horses.
All right, go ahead.
Now, what's great, and why I call it a scam, is that when we look at images of unicorns from the Middle Ages and medieval period in general,
mm-hmm.
they have a spiral horn on
yes.
most imageries.
Yeah, it's not just a point.
It's not it's like a normal horn that we think
like
of,
one of those
with rhinos.
Big, long candy sticks you get. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's because narwhal horns mm-hmm. were sold as unicorn horns.
Nice.
By explorers and sailors for a very, very, very long time.
Nice.
Because narwhals are essentially going to be in northern regions in mm-hmm. general. Tougher for sailors to get to. But their horns fetch a very high price if you call them a unicorn horn.
Oh, I bet that they made massive amounts of money.
It's brilliant, and they kept it up for a very, very long time until there was more widespread exploration of, like, the Northern Arctic.
So it's kind of like this thing, like, when you get inducted into the school of being a sailor, and they just, like, tell day one, they're like, guess what?
Guess
what? There's no unicorns! You sucker, you believed in unicorns this whole time, dumbass!
Essentially, but don't worry, we're gonna sell some unicorn horns.
There we go, make some money!
Yeah, so, essentially, the poor narwhal, which is an incredibly unique animal.
Very weird guy.
Their horns were sold and passed off as unicorn horns, because unicorn horns had, like, medicinal purposes as well.
Right.
Again, it's this same rare sort of mythological thing. Creature. It's got to be good for you, essentially.
And their blood
looks
and probably tastes like mercury.
Mercury.
And to drink it means you will live a half-life, a cursed life. So don't drink mercury, folks.
Flying back to Hogwarts here.
You got it.
So the question comes, to me at least, is why would a unicorn actually exist?
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So I've been thinking about this. Because horns aren't anything really special. It's just hair, essentially, and in a different formation than what we're used to seeing. And why haven't we really seen a unicorn or something similar like that? And where do we see those horns? Mm-hmm. Well, we see them, again, in rhinoceroses. Or if we look prehistoric even further, you see horns and plates on things like stegosauruses and triceratops.
Mm-hmm.
Very large and kind of slow creatures.
Okay.
To be completely honest. When we're looking at, like, horses, probably the closest thing, again, we have to that kind of horse is more like a zebra currently,
mm-hmm.
which previously horses were thought to be striped as well in order to kind of bring in very, very similar, where groups are a good thing in order to be defensible.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And horses are pretty quick, too. So what would be the point of a horse standing and fighting the ground when they could just run
away.
Right.
But if they're a unicorn and they have that nasty blade on their head.
Right. They can stand their ground if they want to.
And then they become carnivorous out of the forces of nature.
That is literally exactly where I was going.
Is it? Oh, God,
yes.
No.
What if you had carnivorous unicorns?
So I watched, as a child, I watched the Brothers Grimm movie with Heath Ledger.
Never watched it. Is it good?
I can't even remember because it scared me so much. There's this point where this unicorn, or not unicorn, sorry, just this horse, essentially, one way or the other, it kind of like shoots a web.
What?
It's very
strange. A horse
strange.
Shoots
yeah,
a web.
It like shoots a web, and then it tangles up this child, and then it swallows it whole. So I've always been scared of horses because of that.
That's ridiculous.
And then and then carnivorous horses, like horses that are proven to be carnivorous, not that there are any in real life, but if there were, doubly so.
That'd be terrifying. It would be.
Yeah.
Now, the problem with using like a unicorn horn in hunting purposes is that it's probably going to break.
Oh, yeah. Flimsy.
It's probably going to break, and it's probably going to be extremely damaging to the neck and the head region for a unicorn to use their horn for hunting purposes.
Battle. Yes.
Yeah. So.
That's fair.
I mean, it'd have to
still be in defense.
The
unicorn doesn't make that much sense.
But it's great. But it is a lot more feasible than, you know, trying to build a better dragon. Trying to actually see what a dragon would look like at full size.
Well, honestly,
there's a lot more structural hardships taking to the air than it is just to grow a horn.
Right. You just say you have a few freaks throughout nature. A few genetically freaky horses. That could keep the myth of the unicorn alive for a long time.
True.
Right?
Yeah.
You only need like three people to see one.
There's also speculation that things like the Oryx and... Not Oryx. Is it Oryx? Ornyx?
I'm pretty sure it's an Oryx.
Being any like an antelope creature, just being viewed from the side is a unicorn as well.
Yeah, that's right.
So you have a few misidentifications like that as well, keeping the unicorn alive and well.
All right. Now, what if I told you that David Icke also said there were unicorn people? He didn't, but what if I said that he did?
It's just someone in a mask.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's someone in a unicorn mask. You can buy those, and they're kind of awesome.
Yeah, dude. Kind of awesome. Unicorns.
He just saw the new Animojis. That's really what it was.
David, oh, I just saw the new Animojis. That's what it is. Yeah, unicorns are also interesting. It talks about unicorns of the Bible as well. Most modern day people interpret that more of like, yeah, a rhino and stuff like that. But that's okay. Sometimes yeah, I mean, you don't bat a thousand.
When you do look at them, you can see where the misidentification happens.
Especially from a distance.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Even so, up close if you don't know what's going on with that whole thing.
There is one thing that I forgot to bring up when we were talking about dragons and serpents.
Okay, tell me about it.
Are you ready to be very, very scared, Sam?
Yeah.
In African myth and lore.
Nice.
There is a giant serpent.
The Naga?
With the head of an elephant.
Yeah.
It has the head and tusks of an elephant.
I thought I read this somewhere.
Called the Groot Slag? Groot Slang?
Oh,
something
man.
Of that nature.
That sounds dope.
Yes.
Nice.
And I've seen some really awesome artwork for it. Minus having a trunk, which I'm totally fine with. But it does have the tusks of an elephant, ears, but the body of a giant snake.
Oh, man.
Which is super sweet.
That is sick.
And the gods made it cunning and intelligent and strong.
Yeah.
Now, they realized that they had a mistake. And they took all the Groot slings and they divided them in half, creating elephants and snakes.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
One escaped.
Woof. And it's out there now,
isn't it? Sired Groot slings for the rest of eternity.
Oh, no.
And guess what?
Huh.
It really likes treasure.
Oh, good. I'm poor, so I don't have anything to worry about.
But it comes back to also showing, again, like dragons and treasure.
Oh, yeah.
Being tied together.
Well, and it's one thing that we kind of touched on a little bit, but with the Eastern dragons, but even the Western dragons, you have one of the most interesting thing about the dragon for me, and one of the things that David Icke points to in his theories, is that the dragon is often described as being a creature of human or above human intelligence, even to the point where it has powers of speech, the ability to speak human language in some cases, and if not human language, then dragon language itself. It's just very interesting. That's always been one of my favorite things about it, is trying to figure out how this beast, this big lizard, has not like in reality, of course, but even within the fairy tale, how this big lizard has the intelligence of or surpassing a human being. Very interesting stuff. And that's why David Icke thinks that they are overlords. So
I think that is a fair assumption.
You know what? I for one welcome our dragon overlords. Okay.
Yeah, dude, I dig some dragons. I'm fine with it. I am absolutely cool with it. So, Sam, that was my breakdown of dragons.
Okay.
Did you have
and
anything
unicorns.
Else? And unicorns on the side. It's like it's featuring unicorns. if dragons made a song.
Okay. All right. Featuring unicorns.
Yeah.
I think
there's a verse there.
I think that was very well. I'm gonna say maybe I was a little too hasty. Maybe we will talk about David Icke some other time, but not in detail. Not a lot. No, it was good. It was let me see. If I'm ranking Jason's specials, I'm gonna say that this one is below Sea Monsters, which I think to date and probably for all time will probably be your best Jason special.
Sea Monsters are awesome.
Yep, that was a good one. But I'd say it's probably above El Chupacabra.
Ah, that hurts me. I understand.
Speaking of Chupacabras. No, go ahead.
I'm gonna hold off for just a moment. So for me, doing research on dragons and the idea of creating something of that size that kind of resembles what we think of dragons today was difficult, man. It was pretty tough.
You put some time in, I could tell.
You know, it goes to show that I think if one thing, I've made it obvious that to do one thing particularly well, yeah, you have to make sacrifices in the evolution spectrum. And I hope that, you know, and I've thought about it for myself because I've always been wanting to write a, like, fantasy novel.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take this in consideration with filling it with creatures of that world, but I hope it takes a harsher scrutiny on the fantasy that we see in our pop culture currently, and maybe inspires some different creation, some different mythological beasts that we can have some fun with.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. I think it was a very well done thing. I could tell you put a lot of time and energy into it.
Okay,
I appreciate that. You did very well. Very well. Good job.
We talked about some fun stuff.
We did. I had a good time.
Dragons.
I had a good time.
Now, I cut you off before.
Yes. We're now moving to our wrap-up portion. So, speaking of El Chupacabra, and speaking of Jeff the Talking Mongoose,
hello, little
we want to give a big shout-out to our listener and friend, Marissa, who created these beautiful... We've put them, I think, on every one of our social media platforms. Our beautiful little dudes...
They are fantastic.
Yeah, she crocheted me a Jeff the Talking Mongoose for myself.
How do you do this?
I don't know. His little tag says he's got all the hot gossip, and then it says, my favorite thing is, it says, put him in your wall, which I thought was funny.
Oh, man.
Jason's little fella
this is great, and
she makes a point. So it says a Jason special on one side of his tag, and the other one says Jason's catchphrase, which he did not say during this special.
I
was waiting for it this whole time.
You kind of like dominated the beginning of the special.
I'm sorry.
You did. Okay, good.
Why don't you say it?
It says, hot, fresh, and straight out of the kitchen.
Hot, fresh, straight out the kitchen.
Here we go.
Out the kitchen.
Jason special.
In the book. So... we want to give a shout out to Marissa for making these, but also she has an Etsy shop. Right now, it's just got a little bit of stuff. You got like some crochet patterns for like a little baby possum, a crochet pattern for a little hamster. You could also buy the hamster, but also from what it sounded like as we were talking about it, she thinks she's going to do some more cryptozoology crocheting and stuff like that. So guys, head over. That's Etsy.com. What is it? Etsy.com/shop/littlebegoods. LittleBeeGoods. So go check out Marissa's stuff. It's amazing. If you like crocheting, or even if you don't know that you like crocheting, I truly believe after receiving this, I truly believe that everybody likes crochet.
They're pretty awesome.
You may not like to crochet, but you freaking love crochet stuff.
The Chupacabra has little claws on it.
I know. The Chupacabra has bat wings.
Yes.
It has head spines. It has little claws, little fang. It's good. So head over there. It's going to be great for the Christmas season. I guarantee it. And then another fellow that we want to shout out as well. We love fan art. It's probably my favorite thing. And so,
oh no, what do we have now?
Well, I showed it to you before, but I wanna give a shout out to a fan of the show, a listener. His name's Todd Sturgill. So do you remember when we talked about it was in the beginning of Mothman 1, we talked about like the hierarchy of the paranormal?
Oh gosh.
The
yeah,
spooker you're, natural you're, pyramid, I think is what
yes.
I called it.
Yeah.
So
oh no.
Brad illustrated the supernatural. Why'd I say Brad?
I don't know.
Todd actually illustrated the spooker natural pyramid. At the very top, you have Mothman. He's like standing on top of Bigfoot, who's like standing on top of, I don't know if this is Dracula or a Mothman, or sorry, Dracula or like Indrid Cold. And then you have like the Loch Ness monster. You have a Wolfman smoking a cigarette. You have a lot of little short grays down at the bottom, and a Chupacabra. It's awesome. So I'm gonna post that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm gonna put that in the show notes. Go support him. Go look at more of his stuff. You can go to his website. It's toddsturgill.com. That's toddsturgell.com. I've looked at more of his art, and it is just beautiful stuff. It's spooky, and it also has like that just a great quality. I love this style. So we're going to put that in the show notes as well. So, and then we actually had quite a few new patrons this week as well, which was super dope. Let me do this here. Patreon.com. That was pretty good.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
It was beautiful.
Okay. So,
he's so talented.
Thank you. So we actually, I think we have four different patrons. So We want to thank Charlotte Fertal. Yeah, Charlotte. We want to thank Austin Duke.
Yeah,
Austin. We want to thank Corey Constable, who Corey is the head of the Omitted podcast, who is recently, he just published one of, well, the last episode of the Omitted podcast, which made me sad, but he is going to re-up with some new ventures coming out of Omitted Productions. But Corey. And then we also want to thank John Widener.
John.
Guys, thank you all for your support. That means so much to us. Ooh. You can go to patreon.com/notalonepodcast to learn how to support your favorite show. And then
Or us.
I think it goes hand in hand there, doesn't it?
Well, I can only hope.
I hope so.
Not after this episode.
Nope. It's a Jason special. And then...
Oh, God.
I'm just kidding.
You hurt me.
I know. That's what I'm here to do. Last week, you told...
Daggers.
Last week, you said to everybody, Sam, you believe everything on the bottom of a Snapple cap. So...
Do you not? They usually print facts.
I hate you. Okay. So, we have two new iTunes reviews as well. We have Paul61182. Thank you, Paul. And we have ESBY. And we're going to listen to ESBY's. It says, whether you're looking for a great podcast or you're just interested in the unexplained, you're in the right place. Two hosts shoot the bull about a myth, legend, or cryptid from differing points of view. It's like hanging out with your buds if your buds were from Boggy Creek and Area 51. So thank you so much, ESBY. I love
that. It's awesome.
I love reviews. You could go to iTunes or Apple Podcasts and leave us a
review. So which one are
you
from? Boggy Creek or Area 51?
Well, that's a good question. Everybody says I look like Sasquatch. That's what the Boggy Creek monster is. Yeah. So everybody says I look like Sasquatch.
So I'm an alien? Works for
I
me,
guess.
Dude.
That sucks, though. I wanted to be the alien. But
Makes sense. I keep shooting them down.
We all have to play the parts we
play. Aliens
aren't
real, bro. No.
I'll okay, never Jason. Know that we're here.
That's all I've got, I think.
Wonderful.
Yeah, dude. Great job. Great show.
Here we go.
Great episode. Oh, go to videoblocks.com/notalone to claim your free trial and your amazing triple bundle of savings and support them to help support us. So, yeah, no, but great show, man. I think you did very well. You always do. You always pull it out with the Jason specials. I always like the week before. I'm like, oh, God. Here it goes. There goes all my listeners.
It's because my notes are literally this.
I know they are. Which
it's,
I am proud
it's
of.
About
Jason,
10 lines.
Yeah, Jason does like one word per subject, and then he could just talk about that one word for 10 minutes. For me, I probably half script out everything. So,
dude, half?
Yeah. So my
you
notes.
You don't script out as me.
My notes are usually around 10 pages long, I would say, 5 to 10 pages. Jason's is like a paragraph. So. Which gives me anxiety, but that's fine.
Hey, dude.
Because it's not my job.
We talk about stuff.
Who did it? Okay, who did it last week?
I did.
You did? Okay.
Yeah.
Remember, whether you're setting off over misty mountains cold, to dungeons deep and caverns old, or you're digging for dinosaurs in the middle of the desert, we are not alone.